Affairs Democratic Talk Radio is sponsored in part by www.algoreisourpresident.com. AlGoreIsOurPresident.com is a sponsor of Democratic Talk Radio, not because the election was a close one, nor because Al Gore didn't prevail, or even because we are unhappy with the Republican administration, which we are. Rather, we are a sponsor because we believe Al Gore did win both the popular vote and the electorate. This rightful victory was denied, however, as the final tally of votes was circumvented by the Supreme Court when they halted the legal hand count, thus giving the White House to their own personal choice for president. Democracy was dealt a terrible blow. Our goal is a simple one, to be a positive voice for those who support our truly elected president, Al Gore, to share articles, full motion campaign video, some great downloads, and a few laughs, to help us remember our president and the positive things he would have worked so hard to accomplish for us. We also offer a full line of re-elect Gore in 2004 merchandise items to keep a future Al Gore presidential run both visible and tangible, like t-shirts, bumper stickers, pins, and much, much more to come. Please visit us at www.algoreisourpresident.com. Our website, as well as the Democratic Talk Radio website, was designed by Accent Design Studios, which can be reached at www.accentdesign.com. AlGoreIsOurPresident.com wishes to thank them and you for your support of our site and all Democratic efforts wherever they may be.
Good evening, and welcome to Current Affairs, Democratic Talk Radio. My name is Al Lawrence with my co-host, Stephen Crockett.
Welcome.
And, of course, thank you for joining us as well. This is a taped program due to some scheduling problems and some otherwise travel plans for Steve and I were unable to broadcast live on Saturday, but just taped a couple of days earlier. So, but still the chance of losing a lot of news in the last few days because there's a lot going on.
Sure. Some of the most recent developments is Tom Daschle got the anthrax letter today.
That's right. This is October the 15th, by the way.
And I heard briefly on CNN and CNBC that they heard helicopters over Kandahar and sounds of gunfire, and then it was dropped from the news for a couple hours. So maybe we're in Afghanistan.
Yeah, we could have ground troops into Afghanistan or at least some special operations going on there. We just, at the time of this broadcast, we just don't know yet.
Right. So, but we do know this. Our hearts and our best wishes go out to our armed forces from Al and myself and all the good Democrats all over America.
That's right. We totally support all of our troops and commanders in the field and, of course, all the leaders that are giving them direction and telling them what they need to do. And, of course, we support the troops and wish them all the success that they need to get the job done.
Right, exactly. And we hope they all come home safely.
That's right. That's right. This is Democratic Talk Radio, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about, of course. As the war on terrorism continues, Steve and I have maybe a few answers, lots of questions, and we're going to be talking to you about where the Democratic Party is going and where it might be headed and how they're dealing with this war on terrorism.
And a little bit of where the country's going and kind of a role that we think all Democrats should kind of play in it as the little opposition.
That's right, because, of course, the Republicans have the White House and control of the Congress, and the Democrats have a very thin majority in the Senate.
Exactly, exactly. Right now, we wanted to say we support the Bush administration in the war against terrorism. We are there with the administration on this. We do think there are a lot of questions on the events that led up to it, and we have some questions about the way they're reacting to it legislatively.
Right. There's, of course, some anti-terrorism bills that are currently working their way through committees and have already gone through the House and Senate. Still lots of questions about those, about some of the details about that legislation and how it's going to affect our civil rights now and in the future and civil liberties. That's right.
right? And also questions about the economic stimulus package. And you said that they rolled in a bunch of the energy stuff with that.
Right. Apparently, they're trying to piggyback the energy package, which will give them rights to ANWR drilling and all kinds of logging roads and all kinds of big giveaways to oil companies. They're piggybacking this onto some of the anti-terrorism legislation, folks, which is something that both parties said they would not do after the horrible attacks on this country September the 11th.
Well, hopefully we can still stop that.
Well, but it looks like the Republicans Party are the first ones to have started this. Tom DeLay and some of his operatives within the House of Representatives.
Guys like Dick Armey.
Dick Armey, Tom DeLay, what they call him, the Hammer. Well, he's living up to that, and he's hammering away at the American public to ramrod this Republican legislation through the House of through the Congress.
Tom DeLay is a pretty decisive figure.
Divisive, you mean?
Yeah, divisive figure in our government and in our political process. I've noticed something. I've been called twice by, and this is interesting, Al. I've been called twice by Tom DeLay's office. About joining some kind of small business or free enterprise group that he's got going that's apparently a Republican front organization that he's trying to get people involved in. And they're not telling people that this is partisan.
That it's a Republican front organization.
No, they're not.
Hmm. You know, there's lots of other groups that operate like that in the world, aren't there?
Right.
That have front groups that to try to milk money out of you for causes that you might not have otherwise have given money to.
Exactly.
Hmm.
Right. There's an awful lot of things in America that we should be aware of that I think this war with the Taliban and with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden and those radicals, Islamic radicals, that those guys have made apparent. One of the things I really want to drive home, I think it's really driven home, the value of separation of church and state.
And how important that is.
And
you know, it is one of the primary foundations of what our Constitution is built on, Steve. That's why people came to this country, because of religious oppression.
Right.
And to have the freedom to be free and to
practice
their faith in a way that they wanted to.
And with the government neutral.
With the government not having any kind of say-so about what that religion is and what they did with their religion.
Right. And I think that's the way it should be.
Right.
And I'm a person of faith.
That's right. And, you know, this current war on terrorism brings a lot of those questions to the forefront, Steve, because, you know,
Look at the value systems that drive these guys.
In Islam, you know, a lot of the governments over there in the Arab world, their religion is an integral part
of
their government.
They don't have a tradition of separation of church and state.
That's right.
But I want to point out something. Neither did Europe or Asia until the American Revolution.
But you see, Americans aren't used to that, though, Steve, because we haven't had that kind of religious intolerance since the 1600s in the West. We haven't.
Well,
we've had a fairly great deal of religious tolerance. Now, over in the Islamic world, in the Arab world, they haven't.
Right.
There's still a great deal of religious intolerance. In fact, there's a great deal of hatred. We got over that 300 years ago. They haven't.
Well, you have to realize that there's religious tolerance in America, but even in Europe, when America was born, there wasn't religious tolerance.
Right. Oh, right. That's right. There was still a lot of atrocities going
on. It was
here.
It
started.
It started in America. It's an American thing. Separation of church and state is the great innovation of America's political life.
Well, unfortunately, it hasn't caught on in the Islamic world.
And I think it's why we are such a great nation. And that's one of the reasons that we have to be careful about being oppressive to our own Muslim population.
Right.
There are 3 million Arab Americans, many of which, by the way, are Christian.
Right. As Americans, it's our duty to take the high ground on this, Steve.
Right. I think so.
It is. And, you know, I'm sure that
we need to set the example.
That hopefully this won't get any worse. I mean, it probably a little bit worse, but hopefully it won't get a whole lot worse to where we don't make the kind of mistakes that we made in past wars.
Right.
With as far as Arab populations that are happening to be living here in this country. And God forbid that something like that should happen.
And I don't want us to make the mistakes that we made also in Vietnam.
Exactly.
You know, here's a situation where our government has gone in, and in Vietnam, one of the big problems was our government concealed what it was doing from us. It concealed its motivation, why it was there, what the real situation was on the ground. And frankly,
what our motivations are actually were for carrying out this war on terrorism, and who we are carrying it out on, or as far in the case
of
Vietnam.
Speaking of Vietnam.
In the case of Vietnam, exactly where the Vietnamese armies were and who were pulling their strings and actually going for the people that control the power.
And also the one thing we have to look at is even in Vietnam, like in Central Asia, there was an issue of whether or not oil might be a big issue.
Right.
I mean, there were oil discoveries off the coast of Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I want to be clear that defense contractors and large oil companies should not be setting our foreign policy or our military agenda.
Exactly. We're not waging this war on terrorism based upon oil policy.
And to do that, our administration has to be a lot more open with the information and stop trying to put in this thought control that they're doing.
In the name of military operations.
Well, and other things. The Bush administration wants to only inform
eight
members of the Senate.
Now, they've since backed off of that.
Have they?
Yeah, they have since backed off and said that they will go back to the normal routine of fully
informing all the committee heads.
All the committee heads that of the needed committees, because he backed off of that because a bunch of senators and some Democratic congressmen threw a screaming fit.
And they should have.
That's right. And I am.
They should have.
Thank
Look.
Goodness, every American should write those Democratic senators and congressmen and thank them.
Right. And later, not right now, where our soldiers are in harm's way, but later when things have died down and things are at least relatively calm, we need to have a serious investigation into our foreign policy and our law enforcement procedures and the way they were administered and the way they were managed by John
Ashcroft. You mean before the attacks?
Yeah, before the attacks.
Because...
Right. And another thing, like last week, I still think John Ashcroft should resign. He's a divisive figure, just like DeLay. In fact, maybe more so. And he's a person that many people who are civil libertarians or just plain Democrats or labor union leaders or
lack confidence in. You know, Ashcroft is our top law enforcement officer, and it is really his responsibility to not only to catch the people who did these attacks on the Pentagon and the World Trade Center, but also to prevent them from happening. And
to catch the signals that might be coming down the pike or the warnings or some of the signs that might give an attack like this away.
And there were a lot of them out there.
Right.
Okay, and...
Several warnings, from my understanding.
And he failed.
Right.
He failed.
That's right.
And the administration's response has been to give him a lot more power over our civil liberties. Well, frankly, this is a guy that we don't trust with our civil liberties.
To begin with. Before September the 11th, Steve.
He was the only cabinet appointment that got a huge opposition to him.
Right.
Now, there was some opposition to all of them. Almost all of them.
Colin Powell. He was the only cabinet member that there was a direct concern that
he wasn't up to the job
and might actually lose the bid for it.
Right, and could nearly fail.
Right,
and frankly, he should have failed.
In fact, there was one that did fail was one that was pretty marginal. That woman from the Consumer Protection Agency.
Right. There was also Linda Chavez.
Linda Chavez, right.
Withdrawal from.
Right.
But anyway, like I was getting back to Ashcroft. This is someone we don't have confidence in. And basically, as the top law enforcement officer, it was his responsibility to prevent this from happening, and he failed at it. And I think he failed because he didn't have his eye on the ball. Frankly, he was out there looking at faith-based initiative things. That has nothing to do with nothing to do with the Attorney General.
Right.
He wasn't doing his job. He needed to be out there overseeing law enforcement.
Well, especially with all the problems that the FBI has had in the last couple of years, you know, with that big, huge bureaucracy, you know, he should have started a top-to-bottom redress of that bureaucracy as soon as he got in the office.
Right. Instead, there was all kind of controversies about how he was administering the internal office and whether or not there was pressure to pray or not.
A lot of stumbling going on initially.
And then, you know, he's in there fighting all these pieces of progressive legislation as Attorney General. And he wasn't doing his job, and frankly, he should resign. I don't think Bush should resign over this. I think he should resign over the way he was elected.
Right.
But I don't believe he should be resigned over the World Trade Center.
And if you want to hear that story, go to a couple of subsequent shows before September 11th. You get a lot of information on that,
that's
for sure.
Yeah, there's plenty of those.
Yeah.
You know, but Ashcroft didn't do his job, so why give him more power? Especially, he's a guy that many Americans don't
Well,
feel confident.
Steve, I totally agree with you that a much more moderate choice at that cabinet job would be so much more beneficial, and actually would probably, you know, help the moral, help the American feeling about this and about where our rights are as civilians and where they might be going in the future if someone a little bit more moderate was in that position.
I agree. And I tell you who I really think would be a good choice would have been John McCain. I think he'd be an excellent choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the Defense Department, he would have made a great Defense Department.
Right, that's right. And he has kind of a civil libertarian
outlook
as far as...
Right, but he's a Republican.
That's right. That's right. They wouldn't be having to jump any fences.
Not only would they unify the country, it would also, for Bush's, not that we really want that, it would unify their party.
Steve, I'm not sure he'd accept it, though.
I think he would do it for the good of the country.
Mm-hmm. Be a good soldier.
I think John McCain is a great patriot, would not put his personal career ahead of the country. I don't feel that way about John Ashcroft. I think he would put his personal career ahead of the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, because John Ashcroft has used tactics when he was a senator, just like the kind of tactics that Dick Armey and Tom DeLay have used in as their leadership positions in the House. Ashcroft used the very same kinds of tactics, Steve.
I think they pushed
and that's why this man is kind of dangerous.
I think they pushed a political agenda as a result of this terrorism.
I have nothing personally against John Ashcroft. No, I just think he's the wrong man for the job.
Well, I think that they pushed a political agenda that includes giving John Ashcroft, as Attorney General,
way too much power.
An unprecedented amount of power. Now, it has a 3-year sunset provision in it, not 2-year, 3-year. And then, by the signature of Bush, it can be extended
to five years.
Okay. Bush all he has to do is sign.
Right.
And frankly, it should not be one man's decision whether or not this piece of legislation would continue 2 more years. It should, if it needs a 2-year extension, it should go back to the House and Senate and be voted on again.
A lot of questions about these kinds of things that are being rushed through the Congress and the Senate. These are the kind of things that we need to take a little more cautious approach on, Steve.
And I heard something very alarming about the process that put that terrorism bill through in the House. I understand that for several weeks they were hammering out a piece of legislation almost since the terrorism incident.
September the 13th is when the legislation started. They started writing it up.
Right. And when they started doing this, they had it pretty well worked out. And then at the very last minute, the House leadership, the Republicans, jerked it out and put in this other piece of provision, which has a lot of provisions in it that really could
It's causing the fight.
And
those provisions are what's causing the fight on this bill, Steve.
Some of those take terrorism and define it
in very broad
in things terms. That are basically just mild civil disobedience is considered terrorism.
Right.
Under this legislation could be interpreted in such a way that Martin Luther King would have been a terrorist.
Right.
And that's absurd.
People that are standing up for their constitutional rights
right.
under the Constitution could be viewed under this current legislation as terrorists.
You know, and frankly, this piece of legislation is dangerous to
America.
Very
dangerous, and it's alarming. And we need to back way up from this a little bit.
It should be repealed immediately.
You know, you have to have certain measures to get us through the crisis that we're currently going on through. And there are certain kinds of things that you can do without these long-term roving wiretaps or these kinds of... You can make that sunshine law a year.
Right. A year would be enough time.
In
fact, they don't need it at all. They already have the tools that they need. But what they need is somebody who knows how to use them. And that's the problem. The tools were already there. Well, we didn't have the guy in charge of law enforcement who would use the tools. John Ashcroft needed replaced, not the laws need changed.
Mm-hmm.
That's really the bottom line. But of course, no one in the Bush administration, and certainly John Ashcroft, is not going to admit that.
Of course, and nor are we going to hear anything about it until somebody starts calling for it, Steve.
Okay, we're calling for it today.
Okay.
We're calling for it here on Democratic Talk Radio. It's time to look into the law enforcement failure.
Because, you know, everybody is very concerned about Homeland Security. I mean, look at all the anthrax cases that are happening. And we've already had, you know, of course, the horrible attacks on the 11th. Everybody's aware that things are going on. And of course, we need to be vigilant and cautious. Well, Democratic Talk Radio is begging the question, John Ashcroft, is he the right man for this job?
And he's not.
And I
want to point, here's what I expect to happen. When they do start looking into it, they're going to start blaming it on a bunch of police officers. And it's frankly, that's outrageous. The police are doing a fine job. It's not the police officers' fault. It's the management of the Justice Department. Okay? That goes right to the top. That is John Ashcroft. I don't want them pointing and saying that this airport police officer or this FBI agent
or the mayor of this or the police chief of this town didn't do that.
Or this immigration thing, need to look at the whole system. And you know, the buck should stop somewhere. And in law enforcement in this nation, the buck stops at the office of the Attorney General. The only place it can go from there is the office of the president. And I don't think Bush should take responsibility for John Ashcroft's failure. You know, he's got plenty of things to answer for on his own.
Okay.
This is not one of them.
Very good. Well, John Ashcroft, he's got a lot of questions to answer here in the upcoming months, and a lot of folks are going to be watching him very, very closely.
Right.
Steve, something else I wanted to touch on. You know, the Republican Party is fighting tenaciously the federalization of airport security throughout the nation, most Republicans even agree with. In fact, what they're doing in the House is they're stopping it from coming to the floor.
Because they don't have the votes.
Because they don't have the votes to stop it. And Hastert and DeLay and Army and the same group are stopping this because, and you know what their real fear is? This is what I heard what their real fear is, that they're afraid that if they give these 25,000 people federal employees, that they're going to vote Democratic. That's what they're afraid of.
That's insane.
I swear I heard it off the net.
Nobody's making these guys federal employees to change the way they vote. And frankly, whether or not they're federal employees.
But this is what the Republican Party thinks is happening.
Here's what I think. If the guys are going to vote Democratic, they're going to vote Democratic anyway. If they're going to vote Republican, they're going to vote Republican anyway.
How do they make the leap from federalization of those jobs to voting Democrat?
You got me.
I heard it, Steve. I wouldn't repeat it if I didn't hear it. I heard it right out of Cokie Roberts' mouth.
Well, you know what I do think is, I think there's an awful lot of fact that most government workers do unionize and
tend to vote Democrat. It would be a union. You see, that's what this is all about.
They don't want a union.
That's the whole thing, Steve.
It's not even a Democratic vote.
They don't want a union. And what's really alarming about this is they are using the September 11th attacks to stop funding of needed airport security throughout the entire country. Airport security.
Because they have anti-union.
Because they have anti-union sentiments. That's why they're stopping the federalization and the kind of security that our airports need today.
Listen, the Republican Party needs to put America's citizens' personal safety
first
ahead of their anti-union sentiments.
And ahead of their political agenda.
Their entire political agenda. But certainly their anti-union sentiments. Look, they want a united country. That includes the workers.
They're getting it, Steve.
That includes the workers. They're not going to get it and keep it.
My fear is that they're going to misuse it.
They're getting people's support on this issue, but not on every issue. They don't have a blank check. They think they have a blank check. They're going to do all they can to, you know, control information flow. Talk about the newspaper consortium count in Florida.
Right. That's right. Remember all the newspaper consortium together,
yeah.
Like it was the Washington Post, the New York Times, a couple of papers in Florida, along with some other very big heavyweight papers and some other media outlets, all got together, formed this consortium to go down, count all the votes in Florida,
right.
Find out exactly who won.
They took they codified the stuff in.
Codified everything.
To do a machine count.
The Republican Party people were there, some people from the Democratic Party were there, but after they with no pressure, none of the lights, none of the controversy that was involved in the count in Florida in December.
Although there was a lot of disruption by Republican operatives.
That's right, a lot of disruption, and it continued all the way through this consortium count. Well, after they counted out all, they got it all done and finished, now they decided not to release the information, not to release the count, the vote count, Steve.
Because they've known for months that Al Gore won.
That's
and he won, I think, by 20,000 votes. That's the number that's leaking.
That's right. And that's the number that it was leaked 3 or 4 months ago, and it's still the same number, Steve. Al Gore is the legally elected president of this country.
Yeah.
He is.
Or should be.
He
was elected legally. He was not legally recognized and given the office.
That's right. It was stolen. The election was stolen by Catherine Harris and the Florida Republican Party, and then it was certified by the United States Supreme Court and a partisan United States Supreme Court.
Yes, it was. And
those five Supreme Court justices should be impeached.
Yeah.
Now, maybe now isn't the time to do that because of what's happening, and I'm not sure when would be a good time. But you know what, Steve? I happen to differ with that argument too. This country is a very strong country, and to say that we couldn't somehow survive a constitutional crisis or the impeachment of Supreme Court justices is absolutely ridiculous.
There are things in
the Constitution that provide just for this kind of thing, no matter what the situation is.
I don't think the timing is exactly right now.
I agree with you.
I think we need to give it a few months, but then I think maybe it's time to go back and look at this hard. And one of the things we need to do...
Because otherwise this is going to happen again.
Hey, listen, guys out there, I would like to urge everybody who listens to this to write their local newspaper and tell them, what was the consortium count? What were the final results?
Right.
They promised to release it in late summer.
And now they're not going to release it at all.
And now they're saying they're not going to release it at all.
Right.
I believe this was pressure from the Bush administration and from large Republican donors and stockholders.
The stockholders of these major, of the consortium companies, have a great stake in providing money to Republican coffers.
And even more so than that is many times these newspapers are being subject to pressure by large companies about advertising revenues.
There's rumors that they got pressure directly from the Bush administration.
I believe that. And if that's true, we need an
investigation immediately.
Yeah, and actually that's something they don't have to wait for.
Right.
They need to start looking into that. Because it fits a pattern here. First of all, I think one of the reasons we were attacked is because our nation is so divided over this selection of George W. Bush coming into it, that we appeared weak.
Right.
We have a president who was not wanting to deal with the world, who was not well informed about
international
affairs.
Who seemed, at least his first months in office, seemed to take an isolationist policy.
Who's learning on the job.
Right. And he's doing a pretty good job so far as garnering support and trying to get these terrorists cornered and brought to justice.
I would say that...
However.
He's doing a fairly good job of this, but I would say something else. He's not doing the core things that really will give him a united nation long term. He's not doing those. He's not reaching out to the workers. He's not reaching out to Democrats. He's appointing only Republicans. Tom Ridge.
He's made it partisan already, Steve.
They have made it extremely partisan already. And frankly, he doesn't have the experience and he doesn't have the knowledge. He has the intelligence. I'm not saying he's stupid.
Right.
He's probably as bright as I am. But then again, I don't think I'm presidential material.
Right.
This guy does. This guy, think God appointed him to this position.
And that he's on a crusade.
Which really scares me, because that means he may think that Rehnquist is God. You know?
That would be scary.
I'm being a little flippant.
Yeah, being a little flippant.
I know, but we know the Supreme Court appointed him. It wasn't God who put him in the office.
That's right. It was the Supreme Court.
It was five members of the Supreme Court.
That's right.
It was two Democrats who opposed him and two Republicans who opposed him.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, there were some very interesting dissensions,
mm-hmm.
unsigned dissensions, and also a couple of ones that were signed about that particular Bush v. Gore,
I still don't think we'd be even into this whole situation at all
if it hadn't been for Bush v. Gore.
I think that changed the timing. I don't think it changed what happened, but it changed the timing. I don't think we would have been in this at all if the Republicans had rallied behind President Clinton when he took on bin Laden, when he launched those missile attacks
rallying around the dress?
And Afghanistan. You know, what they did is they attacked him, saying this is some kind of political ploy.
Right. When President Clinton was just trying to save American lives.
Right. All they were saying, he's just trying to get the issue off the important topic of Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, yeah, like that. It was just a crisis.
We had lost American lives in embassies in Tanzania and in Kenya.
And look how many times we fought for Muslims under the Clinton administration.
Yeah, and I also want to point out something else. In those attacks, we lost scores of Americans, but they lost hundreds and had thousands of injuries of Africans.
Right.
In Kenya and Tanzania. You know, it's important. The World Trade Center was the same thing. There were people from countries all over the world. Hundreds of Britons and Germans. And
that lost their lives in those attacks.
And Indians.
That's right.
You know, and Arabs.
That's why this was a world tragedy.
and Muslims.
Right.
Bin Laden killed a lot of Muslims in the World Trade Center.
And you see, but you know, the great mistake is that Bin Laden is making, and it's the same mistake that people like Hitler and other despots have made, is that they thought that we had a big soft underbelly and that we'd never respond.
Well, that's part of it, and also part of it is these guys really think that they're on the side of history and that they're on the side of God, and they're fanatics. And they're frankly not in touch with reality.
Right, they're irrational, exactly.
They operate in their own little world where their peer groups are all...
A fantasy world, Steve.
Radical, crazy, terrorists.
It's a fantasy world.
Now, there are some things in our foreign policy that helps make this worse, and we need to work on those.
Right. But see, Steve, the part that...
They will take
that,
time.
...that really rubs me is that you'll hear a lot of people that might be in opposition to a war on terrorism say, well, you know, it's the United States' fault for a lot of these things. We're a factor in some of those things. However, it's not our fault.
Right.
What's happening and what's happening to us is not the United States' fault. Our policies did not absolutely cause this.
Well, you know, first of all, how can you talk about the United States causing anything? You may be talking about an American or an American company, or the American government, or this part of the
policy, right?
Or this administration did this one thing, but there is nobody who speaks for the United States of America,
exactly,
including the president.
It's the cultures of these nations.
Even the real president,
Al Gore. If you're looking to blame, right?
You know?
That's right. Thank you. I appreciate it. Even our real president. That's right.
Right.
It's the fault of these nations for not investing in their own cultures, Steve.
And it's also the fault of the fact that sometimes the United States have let the non-majority run its foreign policy. And frequently, it's big business running our foreign policy.
Right.
So the oil companies have done a tremendous amount to antagonize the Muslim world.
That's right.
Well, certainly in the Arab nations and in now coming up in Central Asia.
Well, there's something, an article that was in the New York Times today that I would like to share with our listeners. Do you mind, Steve, if I touch on this just a little bit? It's from an ex-Kuwaiti official who assails his nation for weak support of the U.S. policy. Well, in a stunning denunciation of what he called a shameful betrayal of the U.S., a former Kuwaiti government minister and a member of the ruling family has scorned what he called his country's hesitant and timid support for America's war against terrorism. He writes in a London-based Arabic daily on Saturdays. His name is Sheikh Saud Nasser al-Sabah, and he's Kuwait's former oil information minister. Well, he criticized what he described as his country's lackluster support for the American-led campaign against Osama bin Laden and his associates. He goes on to say that this country of ours, Kuwait, is kidnapped and hijacked by groups that call themselves Islamic, but in truth use Islam as a cover and a garb for political goals. Now, this is pretty powerful stuff for someone to say inside one of the governments there. Sheikh Saud called such groups a menace not only to the future of Kuwait, but to the Arab world as a whole, and he urged fellow Kuwaitis and other Arabs to be brave in opposing them. He said that they should remove the veil of secrecy that protects these groups and their financial and political activities in Kuwait and abroad. He says that the Arab nations will face more destruction and ruin if they continue with these policies.
Well, you know what? I say these policies are very, very close to the same kind of policies being sought for our government by the Christian right.
Right.
And the same things he's saying about happening in Kuwait...
Could happen right here.
...is happening in the Republican Party here in the United States.
Right.
It's the same level
of... Christian-only agenda, Steve.
Well, it's the same thing. It's religious intolerance.
We were supposed to have gotten over that 300 years ago.
Bringing in your religious values and imposing them on all other American citizens,
right,
which are frankly wrong.
Right.
And I'm a person who has strong religious values, but I'm also really sincere in my Christian belief. And I believe people have the right to choose to do wrong. They have free will. You know, and the Republicans don't believe this, and obviously the Taliban doesn't believe this. They both don't think they're not in agreement as to what God's plan is, but they're both saying you should follow God's plan the way we see it.
Right. Well,
or die.
But see, the Republican Party, they'll get in front of a microphone and they'll espouse religious tolerance, but yet their actions speak differently, Steve.
Absolutely, over and over again.
Over and over again.
Look at Jerry Falwell and Pat Robertson's comments on the terrorism, that it was caused because God withdrew his support because of civil libertarians.
These people are intolerant to other kinds of belief systems. They're intolerant, which is the same thing that we are accusing these people of.
And frankly, in both cases, they're right. The Christian right, the so-called Christian right in America, is intolerant.
Now, I'm not attacking Christians or Muslims. I'm attacking extremists.
Right. You know what? That's what's my point. That's where I was getting to. I'm a Christian. How could I be attacking Christianity?
Right. I'm not attacking either one of them. I'm attacking the extremists of these groups.
And I have a great respect for Islam.
And we need to be just as wary of the ones that are living in the Middle East as the ones that are living right here.
Because it's the same mindset.
Right.
It's where I know right
and you're
for
right.
You.
Exactly.
Okay, and my
belief is right, so you have to follow my belief.
Right, and I'm seeing the same tendency all the way through, not just on religious issues, but on the
social
entire
issues,
political agenda
that the Republican Party keeps trying to push through.
Not all the Republican Party. I'm not seeing it from McCain, but I am certainly seeing it from the Bush administration.
The Republican leadership.
I'm seeing it from the Bush administration.
Right.
And I'm seeing it from the
And
the
it's
House
been going on ever since 94, Steve.
Right, and it's time to put a stop to it.
And if we don't, they're going to roll over our civil rights just like a steamroller.
It's time for us to take a lesson out of this that we need a more tolerant world.
Much more.
And we need to respect each other and love each other even when we disagree.
Right.
With each
other. That's what this country is all about. Freedom to vote and freedom to speak your mind.
And you know what? It's one of the things we need to do is create opportunity and get rid of barriers to prosperity for people not only in America but all over the world.
All over the world. But see, unfortunately, it's gotten to the point, Steve, where we have to rid the world of these terrorist cells now.
And even more so, this we have to get a grip on the limits of corporate power in the world.
Right.
Globalization of the economy is a threat to all
everybody,
the people
because,
of the world.
Because then the only thing that matters is the bottom line.
Right.
And you know what? My life is a lot more important than the bottom line,
and
Steve.
And that's a Republican thing, that profits are more important than people. The Democratic thing is people come before
first,
profits.
All every time.
You know, you feed the hungry and you take care of the helpless. You know, and you take care of the innocent, and
right.
you do the things to help the people that need it.
It's not even a democratic thing. It's a human thing, Steve.
You know,
it's a Christian thing to do.
It's a Christian thing to do. And you know what else? It's also the Islamic thing to do.
Exactly. Exactly.
And if Bin Laden...
thank you. Very good point.
And if Bin Laden had have taken his great management talents and business talents and his wealth that he inherited... and created jobs on the West Bank for the Palestinians.
Or he could have taken the money when he was a freedom fighter and fed the homeless or helped widows.
I was going to say this. Look, specifically, he could have created jobs on the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip for
right.
the Palestinians. He could have went to Afghanistan and helped them rebuild their homes instead of supply more weapons for them to kill each other.
Right.
You know? He shouldn't be over there involved in the opium trade. He should be bringing in any kind of drugs. It should be medicine for those poor
right.
people who have a life expectancy of 46 years.
Right.
You know, where like nearly more than 10% of the babies may die their first year. The highest level in the world.
In the world. I mean, it's just a ghastly place to have to live.
Right. And they're great, warm people. I had a friend who was from Afghanistan when I was young, like 13. His name was Farouk. The first person I met from another country. A warm, generous, kind person who gave me my first
people just like we are, Steve. You know, they want the same things in life that we want. They want peace, freedom, and security.
I had a roommate in college from Egypt, Sharif Hussein. And Sharif Mohammed Hussein. And he taught me so much about our misconceptions as a nation about Muslims and Arabs. And also I learned a little bit about how they had been oppressed.
And they have been oppressed by their own governments, by colonialism. Right, by colonialism.
And by American
centuries.
Oil companies.
Right. In the 20s, 30s, and 40s, we were just ghastly.
And, you know, we are more biased towards Israel than we are to the Arabs.
Right.
And even the people who support that.
I'm
policy.
Not justifying it, but I'm saying that there are reasons for it.
Right, but I'm saying we are. And
we
know
are.
It.
It's
and we're aware of it. And we actually have been moving in the last 15 or 20 years the other way, slowly.
Well, towards more tolerance.
Towards more tolerance.
Right.
You know,
and that's the only way.
The Republicans have stopped a lot of this. Now, all over the world, we have to start learning about these cultures. We have to learn about Israel. We have to learn that Israel... under a labor government, is different than
under
Israel
the Likud.
Likud.
Right. Much different.
The Likud's like the right-wing Republicans here, and Labor is like the Democrats.
Right.
And when Labor's in, there's movement towards peace.
Peace.
And when Likud's in, it collapses.
Look
and
what happened
rides.
Over the last 8 years, Steve. Look at how far the peace movement has gone in the last 8 years. Hmm. The Israelis made a lot of concessions over 8 years to try to get peace, but as soon as Likud came back into power, all of that stopped.
Right. And that's when the conflict got really bad.
Right. And now it's just been ratcheting up ever since.
Right.
And it's been 2 years.
Right. And, you know, only now are we saying, like, the Palestinians deserve a state. All the dispossessed people of the world deserve a state.
We've talked about, you know, not we, but they've been talking about a Palestinian state back in the 70s, Steve.
Right. It's time to give them one. They should have one.
Right. Okay, but now, you see, now that a Palestinian state is coming up, everybody's going to start screaming that we're abandoning the Israelis. Well, that's just not true.
We're not going to abandon the
Israelis. Of course not.
The Jewish vote alone in America alone will make sure that never happens.
And
the Christian right vote.
Right.
Because, you know, the Christian right is
pro-Israel. They don't want to fix the Holy Land.
Actually, there's very few Americans who are anti-Israeli.
Right. I'm not anti-Israeli by any stretch, or anti-Muslim, for goodness sakes.
That's what I was going to say. You can be pro-Israeli and be pro-Arab. It's time for us to stop playing international
one against
affairs
the other. Right.
As a zero-sum game. You know, Israel doesn't have to look.
And you know why this is? A lot of this is of oil policy, Steve.
Remember when Sharon blew up?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
He blew up because we're talking about having a more even-handed
relationship. Approach. Yeah.
The Israelis have to learn that just because we're friends with some of the Arabs
doesn't mean we're enemies with them.
Right.
Right. Well, that was the Likud.
You have friends that aren't friends of mine.
Right.
I have friends that aren't friends of yours.
Right.
How many of our listeners out there say, oh, if you're friends with them, you can't be my friend.
How second grade?
Right. Yeah, come on. You know, that was a pretty sad thing for an Israeli leader to do.
Right.
But Sharon is
the Likud.
Yeah, it's Likud.
I mean, they're very militant.
Yeah, their foreign minister is Peres.
Right.
They're
almost as much, you know, they have the same kind of terrorist tendencies that Arafat has, for goodness sakes.
Well, Malcolm Begin was a member of their Gund,
right,
which was a Jewish terrorist organization.
Exactly.
So there's a little double standard between the Israeli right saying, hey, you know, we won't deal with any terrorists, when they were terrorists.
Exactly, right.
You know, the prime minister was a former terrorist.
You can split hairs on that.
Arafat was a terrorist, but he's not now. Malcolm Begin was a terrorist, but when
he just
prime
gave the job to somebody else because
he's the
spokesperson for the PA, the Palestinian Authority.
Know, the PLO is not engaged in hardly anything of terrorism. They have the Hamas, and they have Islamic Jihad, and they have these other groups.
The Hezbollah, right.
Hezbollah. These other groups are not under the control of Arafat.
He has not direct control, but he has some persuasive tendencies towards it.
Hey,
Damascus controls those guys.
But this guy, well, in some cases it may be Iran. Or
Baghdad.
Or does anyone really control them?
I think so. It's hard. See, we don't know enough about it, Steve.
Right. Right. What we have to get to is these guys at their core are looking for a Palestinian state. We're on board on that. If Israel gets a Labor government, the Middle East will probably be solved. We're that close. You know, Afghanistan is a nightmare.
But do you think that they will, though? Because, you know, with the security threats possibly increasing against Israel, this could just garner more support for a high-security Likud state.
We'll see. I think there's going to be a fair amount of American pressure for them to solve this.
In order so that we can be successful on this war on terrorism. Because if we're successful, it's better for everybody, Steve.
Right. Now, like you said about the thing with the Kuwaiti minister, we have the same problem in Saudi Arabia.
Oh, and, well, he goes on to say about Saudi Arabia that this problem with the huge oil reserves in Saudi Arabia, that they are the linchpin of this coalition.
Yeah.
They are.
The Saudis and the Kuwaitis have to cut off the money for bin Laden.
Right.
And if they don't do it...
And he's complaining about the timid support that the Saudis and the Kuwaitis are giving the United States based upon what the U.S. has done for them in the last 10 years.
Right.
I mean, we've gone to bat in Kosovo for Muslims. We do. I mean, Kuwaiti would not be... I mean, Saudi Arabia would not be in existence, Steve, if it wasn't for the United States.
I agree. But you have to realize that all these states are not
broad-based democracies.
Only because Saddam Hussein would have taken it had we not been there.
Yeah, but all these countries are not broad-based democracies, so they're not all
by any
unstable.
Stretch, very unstable.
You know, and that's important.
Right, and I tell you what, he raised some very, very interesting questions, and these are questions that we have to be asking our government
to address.
And what I want to know is, well, how are these policy decisions being made?
And by who?
Exactly. Are they conferring with corporate CEOs for some of these big oil companies about how they should proceed based upon oil policy?
Well, you know.
Or is this really a war on terrorism based on American safety?
Has Dick Cheney released the names of the people that,
no.
that helped, that he consulted to defend? Oil industry executives
to get the energy to get the
one
energy
that
plan
just tacked
Excuse
onto
me.
The terrorism
right.
effort.
Nope, still hasn't released it. Refuses to release it.
I think that ought to be grounds for impeachment.
Stephen, why is the Democratic Party calling for investigations into these things? That's what I want to know too.
Well, right now because we're dealing with this terrorism thing,
and also because we seem to be standing around doing a lot of head nodding.
It could be.
Wonder why that is. You know, it seems, you know, granted, everybody's unified now, and the Democratic Party is doing all it can to keep Americans safe, both here and abroad, and so the whole country is unified behind that theme. Well, you know, okay, that's fine, but we need to start asking questions about where this policy is going, and Tom Daschle and a lot of the leading Democrats are doing just that, but they need the help of us here, the Americans, and we need to push our leaders to ask these kinds of questions.
Well, you know, we need to push our leaders to say this. No government official has a right to hide behind government secrecy to pursue an agenda that's not mainstream America's agenda. No political official spending U.S. taxpayers' dollar should be able to hide who he's talking to about what. You know?
Right.
If you're having a dinner with a lobbyist,
right?
Then whether you're a senator or a congressman or anything,
we don't know what you're talking about. If it affects American lives, we should know about it.
And if you're talking about public policy, which is what you're hired to deal with, because you work for us. When
right.
you're a congressman, a senator, vice president,
right.
president,
you work for John Q. Public.
You work for the American taxpayer, and you're not our boss. We're your boss. And that doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican, folks. You answer to the voters. And it's time that the voters said, hey, we are the boss. And if you hide anything from us, you will never get our
You'll
vote
have to
again.
Answer for it.
And we're not going to be quiet about it. And I'll tell you something else.
So, well, that's, newspapers,
these newspaper guys are trying to hide the information from the consortium recount. Should be dealt with the same way. You should say, look, if you're not going to release this information, you shouldn't be working for us. You shouldn't be here. I tell you, this is an interesting situation, and I don't think that there's any way that anybody can justify hiding the truth. The truth is what America needs. We need an informed public to know what's going on. I think it's important for us to realize that, you know, a free country needs a free flow of information, just like a free economy needs a free flow
of goods and services.
Information.
Right. That's right. Well, Steve, we have just touched on a great range of subjects. We're just about out of time for this evening. A couple of things that you wanted to touch on before we close tonight?
Well, I tell you, I really want to, one more time, send out my prayers and thoughts and
our support,
condolences to the families of the victims of the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, and our heartfelt 1,000% support for our boys abroad.
And that these terrorists have made a huge mistake in thinking that we would not respond, and that this would not wake up this country, because I tell you what, once they've woken us up, and they have, it's going to be
To their detriment.
To their detriment. Thank you very much. That's right.
Very much.
Very, very much so. Either their lives or their freedom.
And I tell
one
you
or the other.
It's out of this. There's some good things that can happen. First of all, we really have the potential to pull together as a country. And if the Republicans will meet the Democrats halfway,
if they'll be a little more moderate,
if they'll actually just start acting like they really do want to unify instead of just mouthing the words,
potential. Instead of worrying about their own agenda and actually worry about Americans.
Right. And also, as an American nation, we need to look at our weaknesses. And one of them is that we do not understand foreign cultures well. We don't have a good command of foreign languages. We have a poor sense of history.
We need to make sure that our corporate interests don't get in the way of what might be good for our future as far as relationships with these countries.
Right. But I think right now, one of the things that everybody can do in their home community is change the educational system and make sure that there's more money goes into this. And like I said last week's program, ask for the history
Social
of international.
Social studies, right.
You know, get some books on the Arabs and read them.
That's right.
You know, get some books on foreign policy and defense thing, and not just one or two. Guys, get out there and read one a week.
Right.
And just make it a lifestyle.
Get on the net. Whatever way you can get access to the information, please do so.
And don't rely just on television.
You'll be helping yourself and our country.
Right. There's some great publications out there like the Financial Times
from London.
And that's
a good
point.
Don't just rely on what you're seeing on the tube, because you're not getting all the correct information, folks. There's a lot of stuff out there that the American public is not getting, and they need to get it.
And do come visit our website.
Please do. Democratic Talk Radio.
www.democratictalkradio.com.
And be sure and tune in the following Saturday. We'll be right here in the studio, and we'll try to be live on that date. Once again, this is a taped program. My name is Al Lawrence.
Steve Crockett.
My co-host. And, of course, we thank you very much for listening to us, and I hope that you will.